Tonight I was going to talk about personal growth and sort of what it takes to make changes in one's life. I'm intrigued by it because, of course, it's New Year's Eve and a lot of people are thinking about resolutions, that sort of thing. It's funny because in the great scheme of history, having New Year's Eve in the middle of the winter is actually something relatively recent. It was an invention of the Romans. In basically all human history before the Roman Empire, New Year's was the vernal equinox. It was the beginning of spring when Earth was reborn. So the Romans who got the idea of putting it in the middle of winter. And it's funny because, you know, in some sense, nothing really changes. I mean, it's a bookkeeping change. We change a number. Yet in another sense, you know, certainly it's the nature of the holidays, whether you're religious or not, they do provide some kind of interruption from the normal rhythm of things. And so it is a kind of reset in a way. And also just the world going into such darkness, and already we can see that, you know, we passed the dark point, the day is starting to get lighter very slowly. There is a sense of rebirth around that. And so it's certainly a time that people feel promise, they feel kind of, you know, the pregnancy of change. And so what's really involved in changing our lives? And of course, the stereotype is that, you know, typical person might make, you know, 7 different resolutions and want to start a whole bunch of different habits. And of course, by mid-February, they're not doing any of them, you know, that sort of thing. And certainly one thing, and this is not even spirituality, this is just basic psychology, that it's very hard to build a habit. You know, there's lots of research on this. It, you know, even to build one habit is very hard. And so, you know, I mean, some people get overambitious and they want to do like 5 new things. You know, it's much better just to start with one new thing. And then once you really have that down, then start the next new thing, you know, that kind of thing. And so, suppose we're going to start a new habit. What is involved in that? Well, certainly one thing we need is consistency. And to have consistency, we need commitment. And if you think about commitment, how to say this? You know, suppose I were to say to a potential romantic partner something like, well, I'll be committed when I feel like it, but when I don't feel like it, I'm not going to be committed. Like, that's not going to cut it, right? Like, that would not count as real commitment at all. And yet, that's often what we do with ourselves, you know? And so it's an interesting question. How committed are you to yourself? How committed would you like to be to yourself? You know, and just allow yourself to feel into that question. Because, of course, any new habit that we start, there's going to be a point that the novelty wears off. It gets boring. It gets inconvenient at times. It gets challenging. That's just the nature of anything. There'll be all kinds of resistance that come up in the course of building a new habit. And unless we're really committed to keep on doing it, even when it's inconvenient, even when it's boring, even when it's the last thing in the world we want to do, that's what builds the habit. Now, another thing that is helpful is, you might call it enthusiasm or motivation. Enthusiasm is a very interesting word. It's actually one of the paramitas, one of the perfections of the Buddha. The 6 paramitas in the Mahayana tradition are generosity, discipline, patience, enthusiasm, concentration, and insight. And the thing that intrigues me about that is, I think when people hear words like patience or concentration, they get that that's a skill. Like, you know, maybe they have it or they don't have it, but they get that you kind of work on that, and that's something that you might develop over time by focusing on it. But I think in America, people tend to have a very passive relationship to enthusiasm. You know, either, you know, this makes me enthusiastic, this doesn't make me enthusiastic, you know, and it's just something that sort of happens to me. And there's not a sense of it being a skill. But from the Buddhist point of view, it really is a skill that needs to be cultivated. In fact, it's a perfection of the Buddha to be fundamentally enthusiastic about life, to be enthusiastic about the process of growth, about the process of being in contact with the world, being engaged with the world, enthusiastic about love. And so again, something, it's a skill that we can practice over time. And in some sense, it's almost like a meta habit. I mean, in other words, if you can develop enthusiasm, the more enthusiasm you have, then the more it helps you sustain work on any other habit, you know. Another part of change has to do with intention. And this is also a very interesting word. Because in modern American society, the word intention is used as kind of, you know, for something like the idea that I have in my head, the picture that I have in my head. You know, I might have a picture in my head or a plan in my head. I'm going to say X and make people laugh, and I say it, and then someone is offended by it, and I say, oh, that wasn't my intention. You know, the result doesn't match the picture in my head. And that's not really what intention is. Intention comes out of our core. Comes out of the very core of our being. You know, in some sense, one of the best ways to know what our intention is to look at the whole pattern of our life. And really, the whole pattern of our life is a pretty clear manifestation, especially those things that happen over and over and over again. Like, that's a pretty clear mirror of our intention right there. When we want to change, and especially when we want to redirect our intention, it's really about getting in touch with the core of who we are. And usually the head is the last, you know, it's the last part to join the show. Like, this thing thinks that it's running the show and knows about where it's going. Often the head is often the last to know. You know, it's much more about dropping in to kind of an inner peacefulness, an inner silence, when we can really feel the resonance. Because if I'm trying to develop a new habit, if it's something that resonates with who I am, then even though it's challenging, there's going to be something rewarding about walking in that direction, developing that skill. If I'm trying to develop a habit and it doesn't resonate with who I am, it's just going to be frustrating. And the more I do it, the more frustrating it's going to be, because it's not who I am. You know, sometimes we get these ideas about, you know, I should be this way, and it really doesn't align at all with who I really am. In some sense, the most important ingredient for change, and this is a paradox, the most important ingredient is complete self-acceptance and self-love. You know? And it doesn't sound, it's almost confusing to the strategic mind, because the strategic mind thinks, well, I have to be unhappy with where I am in order to motivate me. And it is true that, you know, there may be things that are less than optimal in my life, and I can see that I need to make improvements. But the only way I can do that is by loving and accepting where I am. A lot of change, a lot of growth, is actually healing. There's not really a sharp distinction between spiritual growth and healing. We grow by healing into life in many ways. And what blocks healing is, of course, defense. You know, and we all have all kinds of defenses. Some of them are more recent patterns of, you know, whatever our adult life are. Some of them are, you know, defenses around core wounding from early childhood. And it's very tricky. We really have to love even those places of pain within us. And it's very anti-intuitive. The kind of the natural human thing is to want to move away from pain, ignore it, you know, deny it, pretend that it's not there, that sort of thing. But of course, that's not love, you know. If I want to develop a friendship or some kind of love connection with somebody, you know, my first move should not be go away, I don't want to hear from you, you know. But that's exactly what we do with our own regions of pain. When we can invite deep healing into our lives, and deep healing, it's often not a matter of doing it. In many ways, it's a matter of relaxing into deep healing, allowing deep healing into us. It's a paradox because, of course, it's a very long process to bring deep healing into one life. It takes focus over a long period of time to really, you know, day by day, bring deeper and deeper healing into one's life. But when one can, when I release obstacles within myself, then magically I start encountering fewer obstacles in the world, you know, and all kinds of change becomes more possible the more I can relax into myself and heal. And so even though it, you know, again, to the strategic mind, it seems like the long route, that long route is actually more efficient as far as being, you know, an effective means of change. So it's a great paradox. And I'll say also, as always with self-love, the work of self-love, it's not separate from loving others. And in fact, often one of the things that helps me to change most is simply to support other people in their change. You know, it's this profound way that I love myself more by loving others. And I love others more by loving myself, this sort of thing. So, as always, I prepared a quote sheet. I always have quote sheets. The first is just the opening verses of the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada is a very early Buddhist writing. It's funny, in the fundamental Buddhist scriptures, the Pali Canon, if you were to print out all the Pali Canon, it would be like a large bookshelf. And of course, all these books begin with "the Buddha said," you know, and there's no way that a single person in one lifetime could say all the things that apparently the Buddha said in all those books. But the Dhammapada, many scholars feel this is actually represents what must be core statements of the historical Buddha himself. It really corresponds in many ways to the sort of the role of the Sermon on the Mount in the Christian tradition. And the opening verses of the Dhammapada, very simple. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Suffering follows an evil thought as the wheels of the cart follow the oxen that draw it. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Joy follows a pure thought like a shadow that never leaves. And so just this very profound relationship with the mental habits that we construct every day, all of our life follows from the mental habits that we have. So Mr. Confucius tells us, the superior man is modest in his speech, but exceeds in his action. And I love this quote from Confucius, this whole idea that, you know, it's so easy to get excited and say, well, I'm going to make these changes, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And then, of course, I might not be able to live up to my words. And this whole Confucian idea of being so sparing in the claims I make about myself, you know, let me live it before I start talking about it, you know, that sort of thing. The great philosopher Seneca says, it is not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It is because we do not dare that they are difficult. The poet John Dryden says, we first make our habits, and then our habits make us. And it's so true. We are so shaped by our habits, for better and for worse. Goethe says, magic is believing in yourself. If you can do that, you can make anything happen. And so, again, this is the whole idea of accepting oneself and healing into life. The American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson says, do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. The wise President Abraham Lincoln, always bear in mind that our own resolution to succeed is more important than any other one thing. Our own resolution, in other words, our own intention, our own determination. Mr. Emerson's good friend, Mr. Thoreau, says, if one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in the common hours. There's something actually quite magnetic about living in a way that's more aligned with who I am. You know, and the more I can heal into myself, the more I can align with myself, there's just more, I'm just attracting more blessings into my life by doing that. Mark Twain gives some very practical advice. Keep away from small people who try to belittle your ambitions. Small people always do that, but the really great make you feel that you too can become great. Very practical. A famous one from Gandhi, we must become the change we want to see in the world. You know, and again, it's so easy to externalize, you know. Those people should be this way, or the country should be this way, or the, you know, whatever should be this way. Well, what can I embody about that, you know? Very wise woman Helen Keller says, character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, ambition inspired, and success achieved. I love this one from James Oppenheim. The foolish man seeks happiness in the distance. The wise grows it under his feet. The author Napoleon Hill says, it is literally true that you can succeed best and quickest by helping others to succeed. So we talked about that. Norman Vincent Peale, the Christian preacher, says, enthusiasm spells the difference between mediocrity and accomplishment. Theodore Geisel, whom you may know better by his pen name, Dr. Seuss, says, be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. I love that. The psychologist and Holocaust survivor, Viktor Frankl, says, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space, is our power to choose the response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And of course, he's juxtaposed with the great football coach, Vince Lombardi. The difference between a successful person and others is not a lack of strength, not a lack of knowledge, but rather a lack of will. And there's actually incredible power just in focus. And that in many ways is one of the biggest benefits of having a habit of meditation. The more you can focus, the more you can accomplish. This famous one by William Hutchinson Murray, this is a famous quote. It's actually misattributed to Goethe often, but it's actually this guy who said it. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there's one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. And so when I can really be decisive and take that step of, cross the point of no return and really commit to something, then that's when the universe starts showing up to support me. But of course, all of us like to wait. Well, I'm just going to sit here and wait for the universe to support me before I, that doesn't work. I love this simple one from the writer William Arthur Ward. The pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects it to change. The realist adjusts the sails. Zig Ziglar says, people often say motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. Thich Nhat Hanh says, peace is all around us, in the world and in nature and within us, in our bodies and in our spirits. Once we learn to touch this peace, we will be healed and transformed. It is not a matter of faith, it is a matter of practice. And there's something just incredibly transformative about touching the basic peace that is the ground of our being. A famous one from Martin Luther King Jr. The true measure of a man is not how he behaves in moments of comfort and convenience, but how he stands at times of controversy and challenges. That's actually one of the quotes they have at the Yerba Buena Garden, the waterfalls they have with all the quotes from Dr. King. That's one of the quotes there. Jim Rohn says, learn how to be happy with what you have while you pursue all you want. And again, this great paradox that the most powerful change comes from complete acceptance of where I am now. The amazing martial artist and actor Bruce Lee says, if you always put limits on everything you do, physical or anything else, it will spread into your work and into your life. There are no limits. There are only plateaus, and you must not stay there. You must go beyond them. And it's always so powerful because we all have these stories about what my limits are. And for the most part, we're very conservative. What my limits really are much further out than what I think my limits are. And it's always good to put ourselves in situations where we're kind of feeling that we're at our limit or we're pushing ourselves beyond our limit a little bit. Because that's when we're really experiencing growth. Oh, wait, I'm not limited there. I can go beyond that, Bruce Lee also says, know the difference between a catastrophe and an inconvenience. To realize it's just an inconvenience, that is not a catastrophe, but just an unpleasantness, is part of coming into your own, part of waking up. And a lot of that is just kind of humility and letting go of self-importance, When I'm wrapped up in myself, everything's a catastrophe, But if I can just let go of self-importance, well, lots of things are inconveniences, but they're not the end of the world. John Maxwell says, if you aren't making mistakes, it's a sure sign you're playing it too safe. So again, that thing about, you know, perceived limits versus what you actually can do. And of course, Oprah Winfrey says, surround yourself only with people who are going to lift you higher. Very practical.